Thank you very much. I'm going to ask three of our executive committee members who are leaving, rotating off our executive committee, to join me here on the stage. We would like to recognize them for their service on the CNP Executive Committee. Rich Bott, who is the chairman and CEO of Rich Bott, the Bott Radio Network, a national leader in Christian talk radio, featuring quality Bible teaching, Christian news, and information 24/7. He lives in Overland Park, Kansas. I'm going to ask Rich Bott if he'll join me up here on the stage. Also, Trent England, who has been on the executive committee. He is executive vice president. And Marcy Taylor, chairman and CEO of Bennett International Group, a family-owned and operated transportation and logistics company with 14 separate entities. She and her husband, Mike, live in Peachtree City, Georgia. These are three of the executive committee members. In fact, I'm going to ask all of our current executive committee members to please stand for the Council for National Policy. These are the individuals that work throughout the year to make the council work. They put in many hours of volunteer work to make sure that your experience here every time we come together is one of value and of meaning. And I just want to take a moment to express our appreciation to these three that have served so faithfully on our executive committee that are rotating off. And if you get the opportunity tonight before we leave, just grab them and say thank you to them for the service that they have done. Now, I'm going to ask the members of the CMP officers. Actually, I'm going to ask, is Sandy Froman here? Sandy? Okay, Sandy had to leave, and I know Bill had to leave. So I'm going to ask Rebecca Hagelin and Bob McEwen to join me here on the stage for a presentation of our Ronald Reagan Lifetime Achievement Award. It's a special award, and I'm going to ask Rebecca Hagelin to invite our recipient up and introduce him and make some comments. So please welcome the Secretary of the Council for National Policy, Rebecca Hagelin.
Hello, friends. I hope you're all well tonight. Don't worry about this notebook because it's not a written speech. There are just a few key quotes here from our recipient that I'm going to read to you before my introduction is complete. To understand the power and the man of Richard Viguerie, I have to take you on a little historical journey of modern American politics. It starts in 1964. That's where my story tonight starts. Barry Goldwater had just lost his presidential bid. A conservative star, somebody that the grassroots Americans who knew about him had hoped and dreamed for. And he lost. And conservatives, this budgeting brand new conservative movement, was heartbroken. And the liberal media said conservatism was dead. But there was a young man, an innovative young man, a believer in freedom and timeless American values like family and life, in a strong national defense, who decided he was not going to let the liberal media continue to dictate to the American public what they must believe. And so, this innovative young man walked himself down to the Federal Elections Commission office, where he knew would be listed every donor to Barry Goldwater. And so he wrote down the names and addresses by hand of thousands and thousands of Barry Goldwater donors. And then he wrote them a letter. And these discouraged Americans, for the first time, got news from Washington, D.C. that was not filtered by ABC, CBS, NBC, the New York Times, the LA Times, or the Washington Post. They opened their mailboxes and they heard the truth about sound policies. They heard the truth about conservatism and how it lifts people out of poverty and how it gives freedom to individuals. And in that one move, Richard Viguerie reinvented the American political system. Before the internet, before talk radio, before any of that, he alone figured out how to get around the media and talk to Americans. And my friends, the reason that there are so many conservative organizations in existence today is because Richard Viguerie helped raise them to prominence by helping them tell their stories in the mailboxes to millions of Americans. You can just ask any one of these leaders here today. Morton Blackwell, for instance, will tell you Leadership Institute would have never gotten off the ground. Lee Edwards, who was one of Barry Goldwater's campaign people and has known Ronald Reagan for years, will tell you that one of the big reasons we got Ronald Reagan as president of the United States is because of Richard Viguerie. Indeed, this very organization that brings all of us together and has created powerhouses is because Richard Viguerie and a small group of other visionary men founded the Council for National Policy. That's why we're here tonight. Over the years, Richard's American Target Advertising Company, which is still going strong now and has over 100 employees, has mailed 4.3 billion letters, billion with a B. He has raised for conservative causes over those same years 7.7 billion dollars. Richard has also authored numerous books on how we can all be better marketers. His staff over the years will tell you that he's kind of a hard guy to work for, too. As a matter of fact, I heard once that the nickname for Richard in the office, this was during the Star Wars craze, the first Star Wars craze, was Darth Viguerie. And the reason for that is simple, because he knows that he's dealing with dollars that are entrusted to nonprofit organizations. And so he holds everybody on his staff accountable to do the very, very best that they can. His wonderful wife, Elaine, kind of has a different view of Richard Viguerie. I heard her once say that Richard Viguerie is more like a zippity-doo-dah carefree character, which is kind of interesting when you think about those two images. If somebody were to make a movie about Richard Viguerie, Would the theme song be zippity-doo-da, zippity-yay? Or would it be boom, 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 from Star Wars? I don't know. But Richard's family, many of them are here tonight, about eight of them. And the other thing that you hear from friends of Richard Viguerie and from employees is, although he's a tough, tough, tough boss, he's also one of the most kind-hearted, humble people you've ever met. And I can give a personal testimony of that. 16 years ago, when my father died, there was a really big hole left in my heart. And Richard Viguerie, without ever saying so, kind of became my go-to. And my husband, Andy, and I have had Richard Viguerie as one of our mentors for all those years. When I need advice, I call Richard. One of the big things I try to tell young people and women is, and this applies to men too, but most of the groups I speak to, is always have a mentor and always be a mentor. No matter who you are, you need a mentor in your life. And Richard Viguerie, we are so grateful, has always been willing to take those calls and be our mentor, whether it be business with my advertising company or personal or friendship. Just one little vignette. A group of us traveled on a business trip together, and Richard was on the trip, and I became very airsick on the way back. And I got off the plane, and I was green, and everybody else kind of filtered away. But the great Richard Viguerie, who's put more people in office than all of us put together, stayed behind, went and found some crushed ice, brought it to me in a bag, so I could put it on the back of my neck, and he sat there with me until I felt better. This is a giant of a man, and the liberals can't stand him. You know, sometimes you know people better when you hear what their enemies say about them. So here's just a couple of really fun quotes from his enemies. The Associated Press has said, "The nation's liberals are having a bad attack of the jitters over a buildup of political muscle by conservatives. The liberals are especially concerned about Richard Viguerie." One of the liberal campaign consultants of all time, Roger Crower, said, "Richard Viguerie pioneered a political development in this country that is giving the little guy access to the political debate." Oh, imagine that. "He's a pioneer, and he's brilliant. I hope he will stop being brilliant." The AFL-CIO, boo, news said, "Much has come after Richard Viguerie in the way of PACs and leaders, but he made it all possible. It all represents multi-million dollar budgets, effective political action, think tanks, publications, and most telling, significant numbers of members of the House and Senate and state legislatures and other levels of elected officials. All of these because of the man we honor tonight." One last thing, I was so proud of Richard. In 2008, while I was at my desk at Heritage Foundation, I knew that Richard was just across the hill before a congressional committee hearing. He'd been called there by Chairman Waxman. And they sought to try to shut down what Richard Viguerie and his awesome team, now led by Kathleen Patton and Richard together as a unit, tried to shut him down. Richard, of course, was relishing this opportunity. He started off by saying, "I'm here today at your so-called invitation. I must say, this is the first invitation I've ever received from members of Congress that wasn't for one of your fundraising events. And then when they were continuing to try to find out how, you know, they could take down the great Richard Viguerie and his talking through direct mail for political causes, this is just a couple of the things Richard said. The founding fathers, in their great wisdom, added the First Amendment to our Constitution because it is inevitable that political elites will seek to silence their critics and competitors in the marketplace of ideas. In my 46 years of marketing, I have seen many attempts to silence the critics of government. Politicians too often use the power of government to limit and exclude competition for donor dollars by rigging the rules in your own favor. Although most of you don't even read the bills that you often vote for and pass with unconstitutional legislation, and politicians all too often abuse your bully pulpit to cause harm to other speakers, and you do this for your own power and gain. How about that for fighting back? All I can say is at the end of that testimony, Henry Waxman LL basically said, "Never mind." So, Richard, we thank you for saving America through rising up and raising up an entire mighty fighting force of conservative warriors, many of whom are in this room tonight. We love you, Richard, and we thank you for all that you do.
The Ronald Reagan Lifetime Achievement Award for a life dedicated to the unyielding defense of American values, for selfless leadership, and for always striving to make America a shining city on a hill. Mr. Richard A. Viguerie, from the Council for National Policy, May 17th through the 19th, 2018.
Thank you, Rebecca. As I was not going to say this, but you were so over the top that I will. Dad would have really, really enjoyed it, and Mother would have believed every word. Thank you, CNP, and all involved in giving this phenomenal award here. I'm on the clock. I don't want to get the hook, so I'm going to speak fast and cover a lot of ground. So buckle your seatbelts here. It's a great honor to receive an award named after America's greatest president of the last 150 years. Yep. All awards are nice, but especially those that you receive from your peers, your friends, those who have been behind the barricades for years and many times in for decades. Especially nice to receive this award today with my family present, because they contributed so very, very much to anything that I've accomplished. Number one, of course, is my wife of 56 years, Elaine. Yeah. Thanks, darling, for your sacrifices without number. Two of our three children are here, Renee, her husband David, their four children, Jenny, Katie, Matthew, Jeb. Our daughter Michelle is here with one of her two daughters, Megan. Megan Kelly, how about that? Shannon is in Richmond playing tomorrow for the her school state championship for soccer. And a dear family friend, Linda Wildren, whose late husband was a strong supporter of Hillsdale and a dear, dear friend of mine. By the way, you know, you too can be up here getting an award like this. Just one, you got to do one thing. Just outlive everybody else. I kind of envision, you know, I've been fortunate to get a few of these awards here, and Millie, hello, where are you, Millie? Millie arranged for me to get one recently, and I just kind of told when I got the award at the American Political Consultants thing, I said I can just imagine people sitting around saying, who are we going to give the award to this year? And Millie says, well, what about Richard Viguerie? Viguerie, is he still alive? Can you verify that? Yeah, I wrote a health book some years ago called How Conservatives Can Outlive Liberals. And I'm deeply indebted to my wife, Elaine, for her deep interest, knowledge, and study of nutrition, because it's because of Elaine's study of nutrition that I owe much of my good health to. My role model, by the way, is Moses. Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 7. And Moses lived to be 120, and his eye was not dim, nor his vital forces abated. and I tell my liberal friends that, and they say, look out, Viguerie is just getting started. These days I get a lot of questions about the state of the conservative movement. How are we doing? Are we winning or are we losing? Is it too late? Have we gone too far down the road of socialism to turn things around? And when I get those type of questions, I find it helpful to think about not only where we are, where we want to go, what are our goals and objectives, but to see where we've come from, because we've accomplished incredible things, not in hundreds of years, but in a few decades. And since most of you there weren't there when I was there at the very beginning, let me give you a brief history here. And first we start with the intellectuals, the thinkers, those who laid out what we believe, why we believe it, Russell Kirk, Bill Buckley, Frank Meyer, Brent Bozell, James Burnham, and others. Then we have the second generation, my generation, Phyllis Schlafly, Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, Helms, Weyrich, Fulner, Terry Dolan, Howard Phillips, Morton Blackwell, and many others. We were the entrepreneurs. Many, if not most, of the major conservative organizations today were started by second generation conservatives, including CNP. During the 60s and the 70s, we were living in a darkness that I felt at times had a biblical feeling about it. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised to see flies and boils and locusts and blood in the Potomac. I mean, it was dark out there, people. It was really, really dark. Goldwater, 1964, loses in a terrible landslide. It was common for liberals to say, it's over with. Conservatism is dead, and they've buried it. 1965, Democrats control the White House, supermajorities in the Congress. Anything and everything they want goes through. Most of the 1950s and 1960s, the very liberal Earl Warren is Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. 1968, Nixon becomes president and begins his long march to the left. 1974, he resigns, and the Democrats' favorite Republican becomes president, Gerry Ford. And then he does something that just stabbed us in the back by appointing as his replacement as vice president our mortal enemy, Nelson Rockefeller, heartbeat away from the presidency. 1976, Carter is elected president, again supermajorities. So anyway, it's really tough out there, and we don't have CNP. We don't have Fox Television. We don't have talk radio. We don't have Rush, Hannity, Levin. We don't have the Internet, Tea Party, Freedom Caucus, no Judicial Watch. Heritage is just getting started. No NRA with Wayne LaPierre, Millie Hallow, Ollie North. Most important of all, no President Ronald Reagan, which means no Ed Meese in the White House. You know, daily we fought difficult and seemingly endless impossible battles against the entire political establishment, including Republicans. Sound familiar? The Bible tells us about the importance of remnants, how God works miracles with a small number of people. And conservatives had a small but effective remnant in the 60s and the 70s. By the mid-1970s, the new right begins to form. Again, Weyrich and Fulner and Phillips and many others. And we're ideologically the same as the old right, except we're operationally different. We get up in the morning thinking, what two, three, four things can we do today to advance our cause? That was different than the old right. And for the next 10 years, mid-70s, the mid-80s, we meet at Elaine and my home in McLean, Virginia, 8-10 conservatives for breakfast every Wednesday morning for 2 hours. And then for a period of time, we met in the evening with the same people for breakfast. This time, some of the congressional young Turks in the House, Newt Gingrich, Vin Weber, Bob Walker, and others. And to the extent that there was anything that could be called Hillary's vast right-wing conspiracy, that was probably it. Phyllis Schlafly and her army of housewives defeat the ERA and the entire political establishment again, including the Republicans. 1979, 1980, Ronald Reagan mounts up once again, who had been declared politically dead, and slays the entire political establishment, including Republicans and Democrats again. So anyway, things are beginning to come together, but they're slow. January, early January, 1981, Tim LaHaye calls me, Howard Phillips, Bunker Hunt, Bob Perry, and Cullen Davis, and says, we don't have a leadership organization like the left does. We don't have a trilateral commission. We don't have a council on foreign relations. So we get together at Karen and Cullen Davis's home a few weeks later, spend a day and a half, and CNP is born, and within a short period of time, we had hundreds and hundreds of members. All right, let's fast forward to today. You can see how far we've come from that period that I outlined when we could meet in the proverbial phone booth. Yeah. Are we where we want to be? Of course not. But reflecting on how far we have come, we've achieved so very, very much against the entire political establishment, including, of course, the media. Today, the conservative movement has dozens of large, effective national organizations, hundreds of important state and local single-issue organizations. This year, there are thousands of principled, limited government, constitutional conservatives running for school board, for state office, for Congress. We have hundreds of thousands of grassroots activists, millions of generous donors, tens of millions of voters. And much of this activity happened because of the people in this room, the Council for National Policy, and all the leaders that we have in CNP. It was your work, your sacrifices, your energy, your contributions, your leadership that built today's conservative movement. Now, that's the good news. However, I see trouble in the conservative movement. I'm very serious about this. Our enemies, the far left, are on fire with energy and passion. They're raising literally 5 and 10 times the amount of money they did just 2 years ago. There are dozens of liberal organizations that are growing 100, 200, 300%. Planned Parenthood added 400,000 new supporters last year. I don't know the name of a single conservative organization that grew 25% last year. Unfortunately, I see a lot of low energy and at the national and state level of conservative leaders. We seem to be resting on past successes. We've got the White House, we've got the Congress. We just seem to be oblivious to the tsunami of liberal energy that's engulfing America. However, having said that, I'm convinced as I am standing here that the next 2.5 years offers the best opportunity in my lifetime to grow conservative organizations, expand the movement, and elect boat-rocking conservatives. We have the activists, we have the donors, we have the voters, they're there. We just lack one thing, and that is entrepreneurial leadership. And by the way, that's the same thing we've lacked for the 56 years I've been in the conservative movement at the national level. For whatever reason, the good Lord has seemed to bless the left with far more entrepreneurial leadership than we have. But with effective entrepreneurial leadership, I think we're within a few years of governing America. We're supposed to be the party of entrepreneurs, but most of the ideological entrepreneurs these days are on the left. There are very few, apparently, obviously, on the right. And leadership, by the way, doesn't begin with Bob or Tony or Ollie or the president or your favorite politician. It begins with you and you and you and you. You are the leaders you've been waiting for. My advice is pick yourself. Nobody picked me. I picked myself. Ollie, same way here. But the number one example in America today is the President of the United States. He picked himself. Nobody picked him. That's right. So you pick yourself. You run for office. Volunteer, blog, contribute, invest in growing your favorite conservative organization. You don't have a favorite conservative organization? Simple. Start one. We need thousands of new single-issue independent conservative organizations at the national, state, and local level. Look at the woman today, Elizabeth Johnson. She had like 70 million page views of her blogs, her websites. I mean, just a housewife with 10 kids, and she's, you know, changing the world out there. And we can all do that. And to the young people here, by the way, I say read, study, learn from the giants at CNP, and do the great things that God has given you the gifts to do. Conservatives, we have the opportunity of a lifetime in front of us. You know, don't wait for orders from headquarters. Rush to the sound of the guns. Thank you, CNP, and my family and dear friends, one and all. God bless and keep us, our families. See you at the revolution.